Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is David back with another episode of your favorite podcast. This morning's topic is on the evolution of American warfare. Today, I'm joined with two special guests, Armani Lopez, who's a former World War II fighter pilot, and Kyle Kress, who's a general in World War II. We'll touch base on the development of weapons/technology, aerial warfare, and combat strategy from varying centuries.
Hello, I'm Armani Lopez. The evolution of American warfare is a look on how warfare has changed throughout history, specifically for the U.S. military. War can and has evidently affected the way we live in the modern era. The advancement of technology throughout the decades has dramatically changed the way wars are fought. New strategies and tactics are now used on the battlefield.
Hey there, guys, it's Kyle, and for this podcast, we have gathered a variety of reliable sources that have allowed us to make a clear connection among the rhyming similarity between past and present-day warfare. For instance, we have come to realize that over the years, different methods of warfare were developed due to the advancements of weapons of war and oppositions that we faced.
We will begin with the weapon that everyone knows, the musket. As some of you know, the musket is a muzzle-loaded long gun that appeared as a smoothbore weapon in the early 16th century, capable of penetrating heavy armor. A sequence of events takes place to load and fire the flintlock musket. Considering that in the beginning the musket took 1 minute to reload, after that it took 20 seconds. An ordinary soldier, after the flintlock revolution, could shoot 3 times a minute. But as time progressed, the musket has come to evolve into a new level of firepower, where it met with the Beret M107, which is a 50 caliber, shoulder-fired, semi-automatic sniper rifle. Like its predecessors, the rifle is said to have manageable recoil for a weapon of its size, owing to the barrel assembly that itself absorbs force, moving inward toward the receiver against large springs with every shot. The Beret can reach out to 1,500 yards or even more, and the company warns new owners that stray bullets can travel up to 5 miles. With a fire rate of 10 shots over 5 seconds, the 50 caliber gun has set new standards for rifles around the world. Now we move on to the Gatling gun, an intimidating name given for an intimidating gun. The Gatling gun is a machine gun that consists of multiple barrels revolving around a central axis and is capable of being fired at rapid rates. It's the first to solve the problems of loading, reliability, and the firing of sustained bursts. The Gatling gun was actually created to reduce the size of armies, and so then you reduce the number of deaths by combat and disease to show how futile war is. Years later, the technology behind the gun was reintroduced by the U.S. military, and new versions of the gun are still used today. The M134 minigun is a NATO 6-barrel rotary machine gun with a high sustained rate of fire. It features a Gatling-style rotating barrel assembly with an external power source, normally an electric motor. With its improved mobility and style of reloading from the Gatling, this gun is a monster on the battlefield. How am I to talk about weaponry, though, without including explosives? Originally named the Stovepipe, the innovative bazooka was among the first-generation rocket-propelled anti-tank weapons used in infantry combat. Bazooka is the common name for a manned portal, recoilless anti-tank rocket launcher weapon, widely fielded by the United States Army. As time has come, we are met with the RPG, which closely represents the bazooka and its strengths. The RPG, which stands for a rocket-propelled grenade, is a shorter-fired anti-tank weapon that fires rockets equipped with an explosive warhead. Most RPGs can be carried by an individual soldier. These warheads are fixed to a rocket motor, which propels the RPG towards the target, and they are stabilized in flight with fins. Sometimes the RPGs are reloadable with new rocket-propelled grenades, while others are single-use. RPGs, with some exceptions though, are generally reloaded from the muzzle. They are virtually useless today against modern tanks. However, they do prove very deadly in the right situation, just as the bazooka did. From what we can see, guns have come a long way when it comes to accuracy, mobility, and their firepower. With technology giving the push, we have had the ability to upgrade them beyond their origins. Weaponry did not only take the form of guns, but also gases. And there are three that were commonly used during the wartime that I'll capitalize on. First on the list is the deadly phosgene. This gas smells of moldy hay, is also an irritant, but 6 times more deadly than chlorine gas. Phosgene is a much stealthier weapon. It's colorless, and the soldiers did not at first know they had received a fatal dose of it. After a day or two, victims' lungs would fill with it, and they would slowly suffocate in an agonizing death. Although the Germans were the first to use phosgene on the battlefield, it became the primary chemical weapon of the Allies. Phosgene was responsible for 85% of chemical weapon fatalities during World War I. We now move on to the deadly mustard gas. Like phosgene, its effects are not immediate. It has a potent smell. Some say it reeks of garlic, gasoline, rubber, or dead horses. Hours after exposure, a victim's eyes become bloodshot, begin to water, and become increasingly painful, with some victims suffering temporary blindness. Even worse, skin begins to blister, particularly in moist areas such as armpits and genitals. Last but not least, we have chlorine gas, which produces a greenish-yellow cloud that smells of bleach and immediately irritates the eyes, nose, lungs, and throat of those exposed to it. At high enough doses, it kills by asphyxiation. Due to inhumane impact that these harmful gases have had on war efforts, the Chemical Weapons Convention, also abbreviated CWC, was signed in Paris, hereby banning the development, manufacturing, storage, and use of weapons throughout the world, affecting critical supply and use also. These days, warfare is conducted on land, by sea, and in the air, across space, and now on the fifth battleground, cyberspace. There are three main methods of cyber warfare: sabotage, electronic espionage, which is stealing information from computers via viruses, and attacks on electrical power of grids. The third is perhaps most alarming. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation, abbreviated NERC, warned in the public notice that the U.S. electrical grid is susceptible to cyber attacks, which could lead to massive power outages, delayed military response, and economic disruption. Of the different cross-site scripting is first. Abbreviated XXS, it is a client-side code injection attack. The attacker aims to execute malicious scripts in the web browser of the victim by including malicious code in a legitimate web page or web application. The actual attack occurs when the victim visits the web page or web application that executes the malicious code. The web page or web application becomes a vehicle to deliver the malicious script to the user's browser. Vulnerable vehicles that are commonly used for cross-site scripting attacks are forums, message boards, and web pages that allow comments. There are also electromagnetic pulses, EMPs, which is a high-frequency burst of electromagnetic energy caused by the rapid acceleration of charged particles. A catastrophic EMP would cause a collapse of critical civilization infrastructures, such as the power grid, telecommunications, transportation, banking, finance, food and water systems across the entire continental United States. Infrastructures that are vital to the sustenance of our modern society and survival of citizens. Of the most lethal attacks, though, is DDoSing. Distributed denial of service, DDoS, is a distributed attack that works as a malicious attempt to disrupt normal traffic of a targeted server, service, or network by overwhelming the target of the surroundings infrastructure. With a flood of internet traffic, DDoS attacks achieve effectiveness by utilizing multiple comprised computer systems as sources of attack traffic. Exploited machines can include computers and other networked sources such as IoT devices. From a high level, a DDoS attack is like a traffic jam clogging up with the highway, preventing regular traffic from arriving at its desired destination. With technology evolving, the restraint on it is endless. The technology required in the early years of battle were not relevant at this time, until 2006, with investment in warfare. As technology developed to be stronger, so did the deliberate cyber attacks possible. Battle did not only take place on land, but was taken to the air. Among the developing of weaponry is aerial vehicles that will change the way we fight significantly.
Building off of what David said, not having to see your enemy also applies to aerial combat. As technology advances, it seems that warfare has become more distant. And with that, I mean, you don't have to look your enemy in the eye when you kill them. There's a huge difference when combat is up close and personal versus when you drop a bomb out of a plane. But let's start at the beginning of aerial warfare. Airplanes were first used in large numbers in the 20th century during World War I. Britannica states, the basic roles that aircraft would play in modern war were presaged in World War I: reconnaissance, air superiority, tactical ground support, and strategic bombing. The popular type of planes used in World War I were the propeller planes that were slow but maneuverable. Since the U.S. entered World War I late and barely had an air force at the time, we will move into World War II and later years. During World War II, an all-metal monoplane, or the plane with one pair of wings, was developed, and fighter tactics changed. Planes were now crucial to battle tactics as the roles of planes were expanded. Air superiority, meaning having sufficient control of the air to make air attacks on the enemy, changed because the speeds of planes increased from 100 miles per hour in World War I to 400 miles per hour in World War II. Fighter planes were now faster and lethal at a farther distance. New air formations were developed, like the thatch weave used by the U.S. Navy to help win air battles. It is very important to note the significance of air superiority in all of history. According to one source, since the German attack on Poland in 1939, no country has won a war in the face of enemy air superiority. Air superiority is necessary to win wars. It has been since aircraft were used in combat. As technology advances, aircraft become more and more important. In the beginning of World War II, night fighting was ineffective because radar was not developed for planes yet. This gave bombers the ability to carry out missions safely during the night. Nowadays, aircraft are effective at any time of day. Speaking of bombers, aerial combat also extended to ground support. Dive bombers, fighter planes, and bombers were all used and are still used to provide support for troops on the ground and to eliminate important targets. According to Britannica, ground attack was most devastating when conducted by fighter bombers. British Spitfires and Mosquitoes and U.S. P-51 Mustangs and P-38 Lightnings fly very low to avoid radar detection, bombed and strafed countless airfields and infantry columns. Ground troops now had to worry about death from above. Military generals had to control the skies if they wanted to win battle, and essentially the war. This still applies to today. Strategic bombings became common in World War II. The goal of strategic bombings was to eliminate the ability of the enemy to wage war. Factories, airfields, and resources are all examples of significant targets. Cities were also bombed in an effort to discourage the citizens. Many innocent people died because of bombings. Bombers were often in formations of up to 1,000 and were escorted by fighter pilots. Towards the end of World War II and to the current day, the jet age took place. Aircraft now had the ability to fly twice the speed of sound and easily flew at heights of 50,000 feet. Advanced electronics now warned pilots and extended combat range. However, jets were less maneuverable at these higher speeds, so new formations like the Fluid Four were developed. The reliance and importance of fuel in jet warfare also led to later wars fighting for oil resources. Aerial warfare created a need for air defense to protect ground and air troops. Warfare is now more complicated than ever. Destroying air defense is a priority to establish air superiority and essentially win wars. This is seen in the Persian Gulf War in 1990 during Operation Desert Storm. Britannica states, the U.S. and its allies had three objectives: to win air supremacy, to destroy strategic targets, and to degrade Iraqi ground forces in preparation for driving them out of occupied Kuwait. What followed on January 17, 1991, was the most intense bombing campaign in history. By January 28th, they had gained air supremacy. Allied losses totaled only 39 aircraft, none in air combat. Many Iraqi troops surrendered without a fight. This symbolized a new era of warfare that minimalized casualties and disabled the enemy's ability to wage war. The U.S. recognized the importance of aerial combat during World War I, and that is why we have the largest and most technologically advanced air force in the world. The same strategies used in World War I are used today, but on a larger and more advanced scale. A couple of fighters or bombers nowadays can do the work of hundreds back then. With advancements made in weaponry and aerial warfare, different strategies had to be invented to use these to the best of their ability.
From the beginning of U.S. history, military strategies have changed from period to period. The Revolutionary War can be where the first visible changes in military strategy can be seen. With the invention of new weaponry like the musket or rifle that David mentioned earlier, new tactics had to be modified to accommodate these new weapons. Linear tactics were developed where soldiers would stand in lines of three and fire one row at a time. This basically implied that divisions were measured upon not how fast they could fire, but how well they could survive being shot at. This idea would introduce a new type of psychological warfare, where divisions that were notoriously well at standing at fighting wore brighter and more vibrant colors out in the battlefield to instill fear into the enemy. These divisions hoped that recognition of the colors would cause the enemy to retreat without a fight. After these strategies proved to be way too costly for the Americans, we started to move into a new type of warfare, guerrilla warfare. Guerrilla warfare is when small groups of combatants, such as paramilitary personnel, armed civilians, or irregulars, use military tactics including ambushes, sabotage, raids, petty warfare, hit-and-run tactics, and mobility to fight a larger and less mobile traditional military. With this shift in tactics, we were able to use the new forms of deadly weaponry in a more advantageous way to help us win the war. This showed that the country would be able to think on its feet and come up with a different solution to any problem it would face in the battle. However, World War I saw a shift from soldiers standing in lines to now sitting in trenches and using very inhumane weapons of war against our enemies. New inventions of field artillery, chemical gases, tanks, and machine guns led to the changes in the tactics of warfare. With these new weapons being able to unleash a withering rate of fire on charging infantry, new tactics had to be devised to counter these new weapons. Most well-known of these weapons would be machine guns. These guns led to the advancement of many defensive positions commonly known as pillboxes. These were defensive positions usually fortified by a wood, stone, or concrete barrier in which a machine gunner would be able to fire upon the enemy with minimal chances of getting hit by return fire. This in turn caused the casualties to rack up along the Western Front in Europe. Due to stronger defenses, offensive warfare would turn into what would eventually be called trench warfare. Two opposing sides of trenches faced each other and repeatedly launched assaults at the other side until a victory followed. Many different strategies from tunneling, tank attacks, artillery bombardments, and even chemical weapons were developed. One of the least known methods, known as tunneling, was very useful along the Western Front. Tunneling is a tactic in which sappers, or miners, would attempt to dig underneath the enemy trenches and set up explosives underground, which were then lit, causing the enemy trenches to collapse in on themselves. These explosions were usually changed with an assault on the trenches after detonation took place. If tunneling didn't work, however, they needed to take the opposing trenches by force. The development of tank attacks changed warfare forever. At first, tanks were the Allies' secret weapon. These were very slow, cumbersome machines that were immune to small arms fire and machine gun fire. They were used in large quantities by the Allies to break the German front lines and inflict fear among the German troops. Before these tanks assaults, however, trenches were softened up before an attack would happen with artillery fire. Artillery guns were very large guns capable of firing over long distances and inflicting heavy casualties on the enemy trenches before an assault would take place. Artillery rounds could also fire chemicals from their guns, which led to chemical warfare. Chemical warfare was similar to artillery barrages, but instead of firing explosive rounds, artillery would fire canisters filled with chemicals like chlorine and mustard gas into enemy trenches to kill or maim enemy soldiers. This invention led to most militaries giving out standard-issue gas masks to protect against these attacks. World War II, however, was a time where strategies were greatly changed. In the Pacific Theater, many different tactics were developed, which are still seen today. Due to the opposition of the Japanese Empire during World War II, one of these tactics was developed, leapfrogging. Leapfrogging was a military strategy employed by the Allies in the Pacific War against the Axis powers, most notably Japan, during World War II. It entailed bypassing and isolating heavily fortified Japanese positions while preparing to take over strategically important islands. Similar to this, the idea of island hopping became very popular as well. Island hopping is entailed by taking over an island and establishing a military base. This base, in turn, was used as a launching point for the attack and takeover of another island. The Pacific Theater was not the only theater of the war, however. Tactics in the European theater had to change as well to keep up with new weaponry at the time. A European theater, squad tactics developed teams of around 12 soldiers instead of using divisions of around 100. It made communications a lot easier, and it allowed for more efficient command structure, allowing a more direct control of the troops being led. These tactics are still used today in abundance and can be seen in every war after World War II. This also developed to aerial bombardment. With the development of airplanes, mentioned by Armani earlier, new battle strategies were developed to keep up with the times. Operation Market Garden is an amazing example of this attempt to solidify air dominance in Europe by the Americans. Warfare today is mostly based on the similar tactics and ideas used throughout America's history. With new advancements in technology, there are of course some differences due to the inventions of electricity and the internet in the modern era. However, most ground tactics and aerial strategies remain the same. In the last couple of wars America fought in, we developed the idea of not having to see an enemy to kill them. Traditionally, soldiers in early history would meet each other face-to-face on the battlefield. However, over the years, with technology constantly improving, we now have developed weapons of war that allow the men and women operating them to not have to essentially meet their enemy face-to-face. This has caused the soldiers to lose the feeling of empathy for other soldiers that could be seen in other wars like World War I, when soldiers would play football in no man's land in between the trenches during Christmas time with the enemy forces, or in World War II, when other soldiers were given more chances to accept peace and to stop the fighting than in the modern era. We now mostly use aerial-dominated doctrines, which lets us dominate the air and bombard the enemy into submission without being able to see or feel what the enemy goes through. With advancements making humans better and better at killing, strategies will always have to be developed and modified to use these in the best possible way.
Since the Revolutionary War, the United States has been at peace for less than 20 years. War has proven to shape our country today as we know it, as technology throughout the years has dramatically changed the way warfare is conducted all over the globe. Tactics and strategies have adapted from the new technologies developed. Weaponry alone has evolved from scraps of parts. Weapons and warfare have become much sophisticated and much more deadly over time.
The introduction of the airplane to the battlefield added an entirely new aspect to strategy. War now takes place in the skies because if you control the air, you control the battlefield. In the new era of warfare, we see a focus on aerial combat which minimizes casualties and disables the enemy. Aerial combat is crucial to warfare today.
The development of strategies was a key point in the history of American warfare. Today, the U.S. spends almost $700 billion on the military every year. This, of course, means that we have the largest military on the planet, and we have also come a long way from the Minutemen in the Revolutionary War, from all the way to soldiers being able to kill entire cities with one push of a button. Strategies are vital to using these weapons correctly and in the most efficient way possible.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. This is David Odumi, Armani Lopez, and Kyle Kras signing out.